नैनो राजः प्रजाभर्तुर् धर्मयुद्धे वधो द्विषम् इति मे नाथ बोधाय कल्पते शासनं वच. Translation: there is no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, but who is engaged in maintaining his citizens. But this injunction is not applicable to me. Purport: Yudhishthira Maharaj, though, thought that although he was not actually involved in the administration of the kingdom, which was being carried on well by Duryodhana without harm to the citizens, he caused the killing of so many living entities only for his personal gain of the kingdom from the hands of Duryodhana. The killing was committed not in the course of administration, but for the sake of self-aggrandizement. And as such, he thought himself responsible for all the sins. Yeah, so here we see is that perception of something is quite important. But even though, having said that, in the modern view, perception is everything, but perception is only called a perception if it's supported by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Does that make sense? Even if someone's not a devotee and they have a perception on, you know, the devotees or something, it is taken into consideration, but it still has to be considered in relationship to what are the standards of the Veda and what is the position of the living entity who is thinking in this way because of their particular material, how you say, proclivities. Does that make sense? But it's not that their opinion becomes actually important, that that becomes the standard. It becomes something that is considered because of the enaction of Krishna consciousness for Krishna's benefit. Does that make any sense? Not so much. The people down in the village think we're weird. Okay, so then, so that may be, you know, something. Is that, you know, it's a perception, you know, because we're different than them. So one could think, oh, their perception is so important, so therefore we shouldn't look weird, so therefore we should just wear kami clothes. Right? But there's plenty of people who wear kami clothes that are also considered weird. So, you know, you have a whole bunch of old duffers around, so you're going to wear the old, you know, clothes of the, you know, 1950s that they're wearing, you know, and then you'll fit in? Is that what you're going to do? You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's considered so they may think we look weird, so that means because we're different, then they'll be, how you say, wary. But now if we then approach them, you know, as devotees, you know, even dressed nicely, are pleasant and nice and try to make them feel comfortable, we're your new neighbors, we're here, we're this, that, and, you know, this is what we do and all that, then, you know, it takes care of the problem. You understand? So in other words, perception of another living entity is seen, but still it's dealt with according to Krishna consciousness. Because a material problem can never be solved by a material solution. It's never happened in the past. You know what I'm saying? The Vedas, material problems are dealt with the solution is spiritual solutions, right? But spiritual solutions always consider the time, place, and circumstance. Therefore, that's why the material will be taken care of. Does that make sense? It means you have the Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge then has meaning if it's in connection to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Right? You have philosophy, right? Then you have Vedic literatures, right? You have all the social sciences, you have the, astrological sciences, grammatical sciences, you have You know, so many different sciences are there, Ayurveda and this and that. But they only actually have real meaning if they're in connection with the philosophy. Does that make sense? According to Upanishads, then, or it's actually, according to the Vedic, general Vedic literatures, that you have transcendental knowledge, then you have material knowledge that's connected to transcendental knowledge, right? So that's considered valuable, right? Because you're dealing with the mundane, therefore if you may need the material knowledge to deal with it, but it's always in connection with the philosophy. Does that make sense? Yeah. But now that same knowledge not connected to the philosophy, that becomes avidya. So we go from paravidya, which is transcendental, to aparavidya, which means mundane knowledge connected to transcendental knowledge. Then we have avidya, which means ignorance. It's not knowledge. So the same body of knowledge that's not connected to Krishna is considered ignorance. Alright? Does that make sense? So just because it's knowledge, just because it's valued, just because it's useful, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's actually ignorance. Right? That's what the Vedic leaders then say. Does that make sense? So what we're trying to do here then is see how to connect everything to Krishna. Right? So what we're meaning is the perception that is there, it must have a connection to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Because perception's not good enough, right? Because there's unlimited perceptions. Everybody has their own perception on what something is. If it's nice, not nice. You know, it's good, not good. That's always there. But that's not actually what's important. It's considered, what's important is, therefore, considering all these material situations, how to best act in Krishna's interest. Does that make sense? So you consider, but they don't become the actual point. You know, it's just like you're trying to distribute a book. So you're going to take into consideration the person, how they think, how they act, their value system, in discussing with them about the book. But your point is they should end up taking this book. Isn't it? It's not that they come along and, you know, oh, I've had enough of guys selling things and that. Oh, he's had enough of guys to sell stuff, so therefore, you know, I shouldn't sell anything. Does that make sense? Right? So that's in everything. You know what I'm saying? So the point is therefore, one is seeing how to engage every situation in that in Krishna's service, right? That's the important element, right? Not something else. Does that make sense? So here, Yudhishthira Maharaj, then he's taking something that is allowed, that a king is fighting for the protection of the citizens, and that's not sinful. But he's looking at it from Duryodhana is already running the kingdom quite nicely, right? The citizens are quite well taken care of, like that. So then by him coming in and fighting, it's simply taking the kingdom away from Duryodhana so he can be the king. Right? That's how he's looking at it. So that's because he's a devotee, so he'll see his own fault in it. He's not looking at, well, Duryodhana, you know, it was my kingdom, he kicked me out. And as kshatriyas, we have to perform our duties. Not only that, all the senior persons of the community want us to actually to be the kings. And so, therefore, and Krishna wants it, which is the most important, so therefore, then that's what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? So it's the kshatriya duty that, you know, this is what they do. But he's looking at it from the point of it being, you know, humble, is that actually, it's just I'm puffed up and I'm just interested in my own prestige, and so therefore I wanted a kingdom, therefore I inspired all these people to come together and fight, you know, and then he's the cause of their death. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a very important element. If this is the side that means, if one is able to, when there is a problem between devotees, simply look at it, what is could be thought of as one's own fault in it, then it makes it a lot easier. Right? instead of, does that make sense? Instead of always finding where the other person's wrong. Because that's, that means you can find so many things. But the point is you're not in control of the other person, you're in control of yourself. Right? So self-realization, you can make yourself realize. So therefore, you look at it from that perspective. Right? But at the same time, as then we see, you know, Krishna and others then want him to adjust that mentality, because, you know, it was all part of Krishna's plan. It's a bigger purpose that Krishna is trying to rid the earth of all these demons. So it's not just Duryodhana is a bad guy. It's just all those people out on the battlefield, and much of them are also, you know, not nice people. Does this make some sense? Right? So that ability to see how the other person might perceive it, and then be able to judge its importance in your calculation of how to do, come out on the best for Krishna consciousness, right? So that's the weakness here, is he's just looking at it from that side, but not connecting it to Krishna. You understand? That's why it's a weak position. His humility, his knowledge of the shastras, that's strong. But his conclusion is, he's coming out with something that's not in line with actually what Krishna was thinking. Does that make sense? So as a method it was fine, but it was wrongly applied. But Krishna had a plan, just like Arjuna, right? He was a big warrior, and then he became, you know, basically kind of like self-centered and cowardly and all that, so he could speak Bhagavad Gita. So in this way then, so Bhishmadev can then speak. And so we can all get his valuable instructions. So then that's needed. Right? So then, what better person than Yudhishthira? There's going to be no better student than Yudhishthira, no better teacher than Bhishma in this connection, right? Because they're dealing with Dharma right here. So here you have Dharmaraj and then Bhishmadev, who's been trained by, his teachers were Bhrigu, Brihaspati, Shukracharya, Parasaram. You know, it's not a bad lineup. You know, it's pretty good. So then they've all trained him. So he knows more than anybody, right? He's more powerful than anybody. You know, it's just more accomplished, everything. So he's one of the Mahajans, you know, one of the authorities in the universe on Krishna consciousness. So now you're going to hear about Krishna conscious social structure like that. And so that's Dharma. And then if the student is going to be, you know, the personification of Dharma himself. So it's going to be a good discussion, right? You know, it's going to be worthwhile. So that the element is there. Therefore, then sometimes we may take the humble position, but we have to be careful that also it's still connected to Krishna, right? Because otherwise, if the the lamentation results in inactivity, right? Then that's not the proper application. Right? If the lamentation then results in seeing, you know, one's strengths and weaknesses, and then working in such a way to correct what's weak and to maintain what's strong, that's valuable. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Okay. Means I'm seeing, okay, you know, I'm foolish, I'm fallen, I'm this, I'm that, blah, blah. Okay? So that's fine. As long as then from seeing that you see, okay, this was the weakness, so I should correct that. By correcting that, then I move forward. Right? But if it's a matter of, oh, I'm like this and I'm like that, and so this is my eternal identity, and therefore I deal with everything that I'm the, you know, Mr. Loser here and Mr. Nonsense, and so I can't do anything right, so therefore I can't be properly engaged in anything, and even I shouldn't even be around the devotees, I even shouldn't exist on this planet, you know, and so it just keeps going, that it's useless, because what service will be rendered? How is Krishna pleased by it? Does that make sense? The point is if fault is there, correct it. And if things are correct, continue. You know what I'm saying? So the past is there only if you can learn from it. If you can't, then don't bother with it. Just deal with what's there right now. What we see with Yudhishthira mentions that you know, in dealing, despite the instructions by great sages, by headed by Vyasa and Lord Krishna himself, and despite all historical evidence. Right? So they quoted from the past, they quoted the philosophy, you know, the proper application that he should do, still he was not satisfied. Right? So then this is not the right position, right? But Krishna arranged that Yudhishthira would be in this position, but that's how he arranged it. Right? But so therefore we learn from this is it's all right to be humble, to see one's own weakness and fault in that. That's good. But if the result is then lack of Krishna conscious determination and activity, then the point has been missed, right? Humility is to create the ability to work with the thing rather than that you can't work with it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Right? You know, as we gave the example, the child starting to walk. They can't walk. But they're humble. They're just trying to walk, right? So they don't give up. They just keep at it. Does that make sense? So humility is there to generate the proper attitude in which to perform action. Right? Humility is not there to stop action. In other words, humility is not part of ignorance. Right? Humility is part of abhideya, right? Of the process. Right? Does that make sense? I am humble. Okay, that's nice. But I have a humble attitude, therefore I can perform activity. You understand? Abhideya is based on qualities. Right? Does that make sense? You have the name, you have the form, so that's sambandha, right? You have the qualities, that's abhideya, and pastimes, you understand? So the qualities, that's Rupa Goswami, is attracted by Krishna's qualities, right? So that's the outstanding feature of Govinda, right? So Govinda is the lord of abhideya. Does that make sense? So qualities are to enhance interaction, not to enhance being alone. You understand? Like that. Does that make sense? So then what you want to do then is taking the humble position is therefore then you're able to be aware of the situation at present and how to deal with it. Because if you're not humble due to false ego, you may misjudge the present situation. Does that make sense? Due to pride, oh yeah, this will be easier, that's no problem, and then you get there and you find it's a really big problem. But if you go in and that, you know, looks easy, but, you know, it's up to Krishna, and, you know, we'll do our best, then you'll find it will go nicely. Because Krishna then doesn't have to make you humble first before then you can do, right? You go in there proud, oh, this is going to be easy, then it's not easy, so you have to become humble. Once you become humble, then you can do the activity. So if you go in humble, then the activity starts that much sooner. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Humility is to create activity. Does that make sense? Like that. Humility, tolerance is not, I'm humble, I'm tolerant, therefore I do nothing. Right? That's what the impersonalist does. Right? But the personalist, humble and tolerance means interaction. Does that make sense? Okay. So any questions on this? Yeah. Yes, very good point. Means that the activities of Brahman and Kshatriya can only be carried out by having good qualities. Otherwise it doesn't work. You know, Duryodhana is an excellent king by duties, but at the same time his attitude is wrong, therefore he's to be removed. A Vaishya then, whether they have good qualities or not, economics will happen. right? And you probably find a lot of Vaishyas are not necessarily what you call the greatest, having the greatest qualities, right? Like that. Once I saw was an advertisement for, I think it was a movie or something. Then it was, what was it? Oh yeah, it was, I think, Good Guys Finish Last. And then the subtitle is, and it had two guys there, really puffed up business guys, and said, here are the winners. You know, in other words, meaning these are the worst, baddest, nastiest, meanest businessmen around. Right? So, and to be an artist, no one ever, an artist is glorified for his art, never for his character. Sometimes if you ever had the, you know, opportunity to deal with artists, then you'll find is that as long as they're doing their art and the art is going smoothly, they're great. But as soon as there's something going wrong, they're very difficult to deal with. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is it works. Because the actual means you need money, therefore Vaidushis are leaders of society. Right? Because they lead in economics. But economics is not enough. Human life doesn't start until Dharma, which is the Kshatriya platform, right? Shudras is dealing with Kama. Dharma, I mean, Artas is the Vaishyas. Dharma is the Kshatriyas. Moksha is the Brahmins. So we see Bhagavatam means Dharma is to be used for freeing oneself from material entanglement to go back to Godhead, right? So in other words, Dharma is used to develop our love for Krishna, right? And in the process, then we will be freed from the material entanglement. So we simultaneously use what's favorable to always be in Krishna consciousness and always using those techniques that keep us from forgetting Krishna, which means distraction into the material energy, right? That makes sense? So therefore, Dharma, you know, is used as a service to Krishna, but it's also being used to keep us from getting distracted by Maya. Right? Same with moksha. Moksha is not that moksha is what we're trying, it's also one of the ways to technically break down the material world to make it less interesting. So we break down the distraction by moksha. Right? The soul is eternal, everything's temporary. You know, if you look at it in reality, how much happiness do you actually get out of it? You know what I'm saying? You know, you have a house and all that, and you have a house, and you think, oh, if I get the house, I'll be so happy. But you have the house, but if you think back on it, how many moments do you actually connect your happiness to the house? Right? When you first got it, yes, for, you know, a few moments, a few days or something. But once it's all, you know, you got your furniture in, your curtains in, your rugs in, your, you know, different tchotchkes around the house and everything, then after that, how much do you think about it? Not at all. So in reality, there's nothing here in the material world that really gives any pleasure, right? So these are techniques of moksha, right, liberation. So therefore, but the only thing therefore that really gives satisfaction is Krishna, right? So then you're using both this always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna simultaneously, right? In other words, cultivating the positive and then trying to correct or cut out the negative. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Okay, so that's why to run Dharma and the moksha and ideally bhakti, you have to have qualities. Okay? So then if the Kshatriya Dharma is performed with those qualities, then it's inspiring to the people. Right? That's why you see, if there's leadership that has qualities, people are inspired, but if leadership doesn't, then it's not as inspiring. Does that make sense? That's why bureaucracy and other things aren't inspiring, because it's not based on qualities, you know, like that. Because otherwise, based on qualities, you'd be dealing with leaders. But bureaucracy means you're not dealing with leaders, you're just dealing with somebody wants to say something. You know what I'm saying? Right? That's why it's not inspiring. Right? But if you have a committee that's generating money, nobody cares at all. If I'm saying, okay, we're going to make a committee for, you know, generating money, either through donations, through business, through, you know, whatever it is, then no one would say boo. Everyone would go, okay, yeah, sounds good. Right? Because Vaishyas get together, Chamber of Commerce, this, that, they make their things, they make lots of money. But if you say it's just going to be a committee of persons and they're going to, you know, manage your life, then it's kind of like, well, what's the character of these persons, right? But if I say a bunch of people are going to get together and they're going to figure out how to make a lot of money, no one asks what's their character. It doesn't even come to mind. You don't have to. You just, do they know what they're doing? Are they good business people? And if you say yes, then they, you know, you're happy. But if you say, okay, we're going to get together a committee of people and they're going to manage your life, then it's a matter of what's their character, who are they, what's, you know what I'm saying? Automatically. You know, or if we say, okay, we get together a bunch of people and they're going to be your teachers, well, it's like, well, who are they, you know, what are they like, what, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the, just the inherent, natural, you know, human tendency. Like that. Is that okay? Like that. Yes.
As you're saying, if we just walk into a situation and think it's going to be easy, and Krishna first has to make us humble, you know, and we have to just look with concern, that happens on a regular basis, but then how do we maintain that humble mood rather than having Krishna make us humble and then forget again, and then Krishna has to make us humble and then we forget?
Contemplation. Right. You contemplate what are the benefits of being humble as opposed to being proud, right? Because nothing works when you're proud. Because the point is what is the work actually? It's Krishna's energy, right? Krishna's the doer, right? Not us. We can take part. We can be the instrument, right? It's just like, let us say you're cooking, right? And you have a big pot of sabji, and you have a spoon to stir it. Now technically you could look at it and say the spoon's doing all the work because it's actually directly contacting the vegetables and the pot. And it is keeping, you know, it is moving them around so they cook evenly. It's keeping them from burning. You know, so technically you could say it's doing the whole thing. But now if the spoon actually thought it was the one doing it, would that be correct? No. So it's the energy of the person behind the spoon that actually is doing the cooking. But it goes through the spoon. So what's happening is all the activities that are going on in the world, Krishna's doing. Right? But the living entity, they identify with it. Right? And so then, how do you say? Therefore then they take part in it. And they're able to satisfy their own needs. But the point is that since it's Krishna doing it, then you have to have the right attitude as an instrument. So that means, you know, humility, tolerance, respect, not looking for respect for yourself. It'll work, right? It means you go out and if you think, okay, we're devotees, we're the best, everybody else is scum, then you're not going to necessarily distribute much books, right? But if you go out that here's an individual who is a devotee of Krishna who doesn't know it, and they have their identity and they have everything that what they think they are, so since they think they're that, therefore deal with them like that. Right? You know, the living entity thinks that they're the prime minister of the country. So it'll be much more successful since they're in that position and that potency of Krishna's administrative ability is then flowing through them. Since they identify and think it's them, it's much more fruitful to deal with them that they're the prime minister. Rather than coming up to him and said, you know, Hi, Mr., I know you think you're the Prime Minister, but actually you're not, you know, because it's Krishna's potencies that are doing anything, you're just an instrument, so, you know, I think it's better you kind of tone down the attitude and all that, and quit waving your hands so much and saying so many yes, yes, and all that, and we will, and all this kind of stuff, because actually it's not you, you know. It probably, that would be the last time you'd ever get near the man or anybody else with a bald head and bed sheets. Right? You know? So, therefore, you know, it doesn't. You deal with them. You're respectful to their position, respectful for who they think they are. You know, even if you make a crazy man, he comes up and he claims he's Napoleon Bonaparte. Okay, then very nice. So, hey, Napoleon, here's a great book. you know, like, you know, rather than saying, you know, hey, what do you mean you're not Napoleon Bonaparte, you know, stuff like that. It's just like, hey, you know, Napoleon used to read the Vedic literatures, you know, so check it out, you know, like that. Oh, really? Okay. Like that. So I can't buy the book. I already have, you know, one hand's busy. I got something else. So it was like, okay, you know, so, you know. We'll put it under your hat, right? So, like that. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is these principles work on everything. Because that's how Krishna deals, right? Only for rasa sometimes you manifest some ego, you know, some chivalry. But it's appropriate for the situation. Right? You'll see sometimes he'll do that with the Cowherd Boys, right? You know, they challenge him to a wrestling match or something, and so then he'll take on that mood. It's just for fun. Or we see with the, you know, the demons, you know, Poundrika, you know, he's very proud. So then Krishna comes out and says, yes, you know, this black snake Krishna is now going to swallow up the frog Poundrika. You know, it adds to the Kshatriya flavor. Or sometimes with the gopis, then they'll start, you know, kind of a verbal, how you say, argument over the word definition of words, you know. They'll do that, so they'll manifest some youthful arrogance like that. But it's all just part of the relationship. It's appreciated at the time. Because you see is then when he gets overly arrogant, then the gopis chastise him. So then he becomes very, very humble. You know? In other words, when Radharani gets angry with him, then he becomes humble. He stops all his, he doesn't joke with her or anything like that. You know, that's, Shastra mentions that's rule number one. When a woman is angry, she's never to be chastised. Like that. The crying woman is never chastised. Like that. So the only way to deal is humility. See, if he Krishna, he just immediately becomes humble. Like that, you know. So he has fun. He creates the situation, gets them angry, and then he becomes humble. You know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, because it's how Krishna works. Krishna does, he's not proud that he's God. He just is, so he just does his God things, right? So therefore, you're a devotee, you have certain, you know, abilities or like that, and so you're not proud of it, you just use it, right? That's, you would call someone who has no airs about them, but is very dynamic and expert and very cooperative, you'd say that this is a, you know, a very normal person. No trips, no nothing. So that's the way Krishna is. So that's the way he expects your devotees to be. Right? You want to associate with Krishna who has no trips, therefore you can't. You shouldn't have any. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it means you want to associate with those who are powerful, you have to be powerful, right? You know, those who are rich, who are rich, those who are famous, who are famous. You know, something, there has to be some opulence that is there. So therefore, Krishna is humble, does his duties without desiring result, right? And he respects everybody's position, right? He's created it. He is Varnashram. So someone says they're the king, someone says they're the prime minister, someone says they're the, you know, the general, that all those positions are him, their potency is him, but Krishna deals with them as if, okay, they are the position. So he's respectful towards them. Does that make sense? You know, he's not expecting a result. Therefore he goes and, you know, talks to Duryodhana about peace and doesn't get it, and so he just leaves. Like that. He talks to Yudhishthira Maharshi, preaches to him, doesn't get a response. He doesn't get angry. What is this? I'm God, you're not listening to me. No, he just says, you know, he tried, okay. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So Krishna's sitting in your heart, you know, telling you, okay, do this, do that, you know, and you don't do that, and then he still sits there. Next opportunity gives you another pointer. Like that. That makes sense? Yes.
Maharaj was saying when we become humble, we shouldn't do something, we shouldn't just kind of avoid ignorance. So if we go through a situation that makes us humble, then we go, then we try and do the right thing, and then we end up going around in cycles and just going back to the same from the beginning. So we go ahead and we try and become humble and do the right thing, and we don't seem to get anywhere, we just keep going around in cycles. Is that due to insincerity then?
Going around in circles means then we're not actually applying ourselves to actual time, place, and circumstance. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because if you're dealing with this time, place, and circumstance, then it will move forward. They move slowly, but at least you're dealing yourself with that. Or it's a matter, or it means, in other words, the technique is not right. So it's either then you don't know what to do, so therefore you watch and wait and figure out what's there, or you step back a bit, it could be because it's not working because there's something bigger, right? The computer, you, no matter how many times you push the buttons and do everything according to the manual, it's not working. And then you step back a bit and notice it's not plugged in. You know? Like that. So, like that, you have to just see what it is. Because point is action gives results. So if you're not getting result, means the action's not being performed right. Either it's the wrong action or there's something you're not taking into consideration. Right? Verb means time, mood, accomplishment. Right? That's what verbs deal with. You know, time, past, present, and future. They deal with the mood, you know, like that. And they deal with what's accomplished. Either existence is there or a singular accomplishment or a dual accomplishment. Right? That's how, what verbs cover. So, therefore, if it's not working, means it may be the time's not right. You know, the time's in the future, or the time was in the past, or the time's now, but you're dealing in the future or past. You know, some way you're not connected with the proper time. Does that make sense? Or your mood's wrong, so therefore we said the humility and stuff like that. Or, you know, and therefore there's no accomplishment. Right? Or you're trying to deal with something just in a state of existence when there should be an accomplishment, or you're dealing with an accomplishment when it just should be a state of existence. You know what I'm saying? State of existence means you're just there, right? But you're not doing anything specifically. In other words, right now is the wrong time for you to do anything. According to the time, according to the mood, the environment, the circumstances, therefore, at this moment, you should do nothing. Right? Because if you do anything, it'll just get worse. So therefore, trying to do something will just make it worse. So you do nothing. But it's not that you're not considering the time and the mood. Therefore, it's still a verb. It's still active. Though it results in a passive state. Does that make sense? Right? Means, in other words, you've said something and it made someone else upset. So now, no matter what you say, it'll just make them more upset. So the best thing is just sit there and say nothing. Right? And when they finished expressing their upsetness, then that's the time then to become active again. Does that make sense? Or you're just there existing when you should be doing something to get a result. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So those possibilities are there. So in other words, you just have to contemplate more what's going on if you're not getting the result. So if the mood's right, then that's good. But it may be, humility doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, one is like, you know, kind of grumbling and stuff like that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was making the point that, you know, the living entity, you are preaching the instruction of, you know, Guru, Krishna, you know, and the Vaishnavas. So it's their word, not ours. So one could very boldly and powerfully speak it. That would be humility, because it's their words, not yours. If it's like you're saying because I'm saying it, then that's pride. But if you're saying because this is what they say and this is correct and you have faith in that, and others don't, so therefore you may be strong to try to make them aware of the situation or wake them up from their ignorance, or, you know, in some way get the point across. That's not pride. Right? Does that make sense? That's, you know what I'm saying? That's the position, or that's the position of the knowledge, or position of being the teacher, or position of, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, therefore, humility doesn't simply have to mean that you're out there and kind of moping and keeping your head down. You know, would you like a book? You know, it's, you know, that's not humble, because then point is, so you could go out there, be very, you know, aggressive, or be very forward, or be very, you know, just, how you say, you know, kind of like charismatic or things like that, because the purpose is you're doing this for Krishna. But if you think, I'm doing this, that's when it becomes a problem. But if you find that for my personality, for the people I'm dealing with, or for you know, the environment that we're in, you know, it's a festival, therefore you're going to be happy, you know, like that. You know, you go, say, distribute books at a funeral, then you kind of want to be a little bit more sober in that, you know. Go out and, you know, like that, and, you know, yeah, death, and it's a problem, and, you know, this book tells about, you know, where they go after death, you know, if you just wanted to know, and things like that, you know, so. And so it's, you know what I'm saying? So it's, that's the point, is that humility means not thinking you're the doer. It doesn't mean that you have to be there moping around and, you know, tripping over your dhoti and stuff like that, because, you know, you're so humble that, you know, you can't do anything and, you know, like that. No, you can't do anything, but you're an instrument for Krishna doing things, so then get out there and do it. You know what I'm saying? You know, don't be mental, do it. Because mental means actually it's just another manifestation of pride. Right? You know what I'm saying? Pride is the aggressive form, and lack of confidence is the... Overconfident is the aggressive form, and underconfident is the passive form. But it's the same ego. Right? Underconfident is means that I actually feel I should be very successful and I'm very together, but somehow or another it's not working out that way, therefore I don't do anything. You know what I'm saying? I'm not confident of my overconfident position, right? Does that make sense? Because the point is, it's in between. It's like one is comfortable to do the activity, but one knows one is actually not the you know, the doer, or the cause of the activity, or cause of the results, right? And the results aren't ours. So therefore, then with that attitude, then it goes very smoothly. Right. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you have someone who, you know, can cook, so therefore you say, okay, it's your turn to cook the offering. And they say, okay, and then they go into the kitchen and cook. You know, you can expect it'll turn out nice, but if you go, you know, it's your turn to cook, and, oh, I can't cook, and, no, it'll be bad, and then, you know, everybody will criticize it, then that's not, you know, that's ego, because... That, or if you go in there and you go, it's your turn to cook. Yes, you know, I'm the man. Yeah, I'm in there. We're gonna cook for Krishna. You know, then it's kind of like, well, what? Like that. Maybe you should start with the pots. Maybe like that. Call the next devotee. You know. So does that make sense? So it's just two forms of ego. Just one is active, one is passive. Like that. That's why sometimes. Lack of confidence is taken as humility, but actually that's what we mean. Lack of confidence is not humility, it's ignorance. So it's a form of false ego, therefore it's ignorance. Therefore nothing gets done. You know what I'm saying? What we're talking about is you're not proud, but you know, you go ahead and do the activity. It means you know the skill to do, but the result is up to Krishna. Even if you've cooked a million times, still it's up to Krishna if it works out nice. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
How is it that lack of confidence is not humility, but Krishna takes away your confidence to make you humble?
It's a technique to get at, because you're proud, so then you can hear nothing. But when you're unconfident, then because you want to get confident, then you're willing to listen. But you do find sometimes people get so much, the taste of the mode of ignorance is so great, and because lack of confidence brings everything to yourself. You become the center, right? Overconfident, you're the center. Underconfident, you're the center, right? But if you're in the middle, then it's the activity is the prominent. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the problem. They bring it to there that you're aware of yourself, but then you're supposed to then see, well, it's Krishna's the doer, right? Should be as soon as you go out there, yeah, it'll be a great day, you know, I'm feeling a good mood, the sun's out, the people are there, and then you go out and then bang, 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 they just, ignore you, and then you kind of like sit there and go, what happened? And that's, oh, because I'm thinking I'm, you know, going to do great. So then you take the humble mood, and then you use the same technique, and then you find then it works better. Right? But you have to be sincere at it. You can't say, oh, I'm being proud, so I'll just, you know, be humble, you know, quote, unquote. And then you'll find is then, you know, then sometimes the karmas can be very perceptive of, you know, where you're at. You know, you come up and, you know, I remember we used to use the thing of, I think, to stop the people about ask for the time, right? So one person I asked for the time, and they looked at me and say, do you really want to know the time? You know, because just the tone of voice was didn't match the words like that, you know. So, you know, they sometimes they're not stupid like that. They're quite observant. You know? So, you know, in this way then Krishna, he has his ways, you know. Like that. I remember one devotee was there and lacking confidence and trying to sell the books. The karma just looked at him and says, you know, if you were more confident, you would do better, you know, like that, and then walked off. You know, stuff like that. So sometimes, you know, Krishna has fun telling us things through, you know, how you say, mediums that we don't expect, you know, like that. Is that okay? Okay. Yes. Do you realize that's on the guy in the back? Yeah. Is that to say most of the time it's the guy next to the one that's talking? Okay.
So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the different items of knowledge and refers to humility and pridelessness.
Yeah.
Can you describe what the differences between those two?
Pridelessness means that humility. Humility, I see more as like its identity, right? A pridelessness is, so that's more in Sambandha. Pridelessness, I mean, yeah, right, humility. Pridelessness would be more in connected with accomplishment, right? Because you're going to be proud if something happens in result. So, therefore, humility will be your identity. Pridelessness will be how you carry out the activity. It means when the result comes, then you maintain the proper attitude. Because otherwise you might become proud that, yes, you know, it's done. You know, or, you know, I'm so good, I'm so humble, therefore I'm getting such a good result. You know. Does that make sense? It's subtle, off the same point. Humility is the thing that it's all based on. Like that. From there, all the other qualities will come. Like that. So, you know, so that's, and Krishna says that's knowledge. So actually, humility, all these qualities are knowledge. That's why in the Gurukul system, then the children cultivate the activities that generate these qualities. Right? Because they're in, so many will say, well, unless you're studying books, it's not academics, it's not knowledge. But then the mentality and the perspective that's necessary to use that knowledge is also knowledge. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why then study and practical service both must go on together. If one only studies, one will get some basic knowledge, but it's not actually applicable. Because realization is real knowledge. Right? And if one only does service without understanding philosophy or contemplating, then also then it's not as strong, because then you're working more on sentiment, so you might be deviated. Right? So therefore the combination. So depending upon the individual, the combination would be more knowledge, less service, more service, less knowledge. You know, like someone means Buddhi Yoga includes Karma, Jnana, and Dhyana, and Bhakti Yogas. It's the combination of that, you know, in sadhana. You know, that's, in other words, it's devotional services practice is Buddha yoga. So then someone who they're more engrossed in the physical, therefore karma yoga is going to be where they're going to be fully absorbed, right? Like that. Jnana yoga, then it will be more into the metaphysics and everything, what's behind it, why it works, and then looking at it like that. Dhyana means then you're more just meditating on Krishna, just remembering Krishna. That's what comes naturally, right? And bhakti means then it's devotion. So therefore, performance of the duties with knowledge, right? Remembering Krishna, so that's dhyana, and for Krishna, that's bhakti, right? That's what Krishna will always mention in Gita. So whatever is the proportion that will keep you engaged, then that's what you do. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, because the activity will generate the proper mood will generate the proper activity. You know what I'm saying? So they nourish each other. So that's why you'll find those that do a lot of service generally have the ability to do a lot of study. Right? So the two go together. That's why for the student, brahmacharya is described as a menial servant rather than an academic. Because if he is a menial servant, he can be an academic. But if he's not a menial servant, he actually isn't really an academic, right? Because as mentioned, as Mataji brought up, is about brahmas and kshatriyas work by these qualities. So if you have an academic that doesn't have those qualities, technically he's not actually an academic. Because academic, you know, is supposed to be brahminical. Or at least have the brahminical culture, right? You might have a kshatriya, a vaishya that's very academic, that's fine. But it's manifest through brahminical culture. Right? So that means qualities. Right? So as we can see in there, of the 20 items that are called knowledge, I think one of them is study of the scriptures. Right, and the other 19 are other qualities or situations you put yourself in, but those have mentalities that make for those situations. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, if anything else, then we'll end here. Yes.
Maharaj, you're saying sometimes you contemplation if you're experiencing difficulty. So if you're on Sankita, it's very tough. Is it good to go off and leave and contemplate and then come back?
No. The point is, you see, is it's not leaving the battlefield if it works. I mean, it's like you see Yudhishthira when he was too, you know, wounded, this and that. Then they go off and get treated and then come back on the battlefield. But in other words, you start from whatever is the simplest. In other words, if you could just stop for a moment, contemplate what's going on, and that will do the work, and then things start again, then you do that. But, you know, so the more severe it is, then the more you deal with it, you know. Does that make sense? But don't, just because one time it worked, to go off and sit and read, then every time there's a little thing, go off and sit and read, because it may not need that. You know, that situation, it worked because it was that intense. But this time, maybe just going, oh, maybe I'm, you know, doing that. Oh, yeah, last time I was here, then the people were like this, or maybe my attitude's wrong, or, you know, like that. So just that few moments of contemplation, that might do the job. If not, then, you know, take it more seriously. But don't never use it as an excuse not to do the service. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because otherwise, it may not work. That means you'll see, is if after going, sitting down and reading, then it comes and you go out there and just do it, you know, more books, then you know it worked. But if you go out there and you're in the same mentality, then you know it wasn't that. It's that something else is there in your attitude and all that. So that needs to be corrected. Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? Yes.
The three modes of material nature, they cover everything in the material world and its passion. So, as Sambandha,
You can't flip the that thing? Does it flip around? That thing doesn't turn around? Yeah, but at least you can recognize where the face is. You don't have to. We'll make you into professional. Yeah.
It is the right way.
Yeah, okay.
So, it's Abhidaya, Prirodha, and Sambandha, they contain everything.
Everything works by it. Because, see, the basic principle is Krishna creates everything. So, that means is what it's created from, it's going to have those elements, right? You know, gold ore will produce gold. You know, like that, you know. Means you take a rock and you make something out of it, it's still made out of stone. Or you take wood and make something out of it, a house, it's still made out of wood. So it still has the principles and functioning of wood. So just like wood burns, so the house will burn. Stone doesn't burn, therefore a stone house won't burn. So, like that, you know. Does that make sense? So, because Krishna is Satchitananda, therefore everything in the spiritual world is Satchitananda, and everything in the reflection is Satchitananda. In other words, ignorance, temporariness and distress, you know. And so that becomes your modes of nature. So Satchitananda turns into the three modes, reflects into the three modes. So just as Satchitananda, everything's made out of it, therefore everything functions according to it, therefore the reflection of that of the three modes of nature, the material world, everything will act according to that. So you can find that. So you know how the modes, then you know how actually everything works in the world, you know, by observation, contemplation, by practice, like that. So that's why these formulas are given, you know. Like that. You can catch that, then you can see what works. So of that, there's unlimited forms it could take. So then Krishna gives specific methods to approach it. Right? So he gives the divine and demoniac, how the modes of nature work in comparison to, you know, charity, austerity, you know, sacrifice, food, you know, all these different things. So from there you can understand how they're working, and then you can take that and apply that in your life in areas that may be outside of that. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So, you know, like say, maybe he doesn't mention clothes, but then you look at, okay, are you wearing something that you're trying to generate therefore appreciation from everybody? So that'll be, you know, status, that'll be passion. Or you couldn't care less about any of this and you just got an attitude, that'll be ignorance. Or you maintain what is the proper status quo, what's expected of you in the culture, so you wear that, that's goodness. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So then you know you can apply it into anything, because you know from those examples, which are very major in applying everybody's life, therefore you can find technicality behind how it's working. You know what I'm saying? The formulas, how it's working. So then you can apply it in your life. That's where contemplation is there. Is that you get knowledge, you contemplate it, then you'll be able to see how to apply it. Otherwise, if it's not contemplated, it won't be applied. Right? And if you're contemplating, then therefore you ask questions. Right? Means you're trying to apply it, it'll generate questions, therefore you ask questions. Like that. Because you're asking questions for application. Like that. You know? And then the desire to know will then be generated from service. Right? So we see is when you do service, then you want to know. When you want to know, then you inquire submissively. When you inquire submissively, it's to apply it, so therefore you do service. So it's a, you know, self-perpetuating, you know, like that machine of how knowledge works. That's why it's said that, you know, knowledge and those qualities go together. Like that, because you have to desire to know. So that's basically inquisitive, that's a quality. You have to inquire submissively, that's qualities. And to do the service, because then in that attitude, then that requires qualities. So then the qualities will generate the environment which knowledge can be gained and contemplated and applied. Is that okay? Okay. Anything else, sir? Yes.
Preaching to man.
Nowadays, you'd have to. That would be a very, how you say, subjective question. You know, it could be. Basically, is that depending on what it is. In general, you could say men. The approach you'd use the intellectual, right? Logical and all that. Women, you would use the mental and emotional. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So men will be more into things, women more into the experience gained by it. You know? Does that make sense? So that would generally be, tone of voice also would be different. You know, you're more gentle with the ladies, but with men it'd be more straight like that. That's just, does that answer your question? Or, you understand? Because there's two approaches to something. In other words, the intellectual approach means you make your point first, then you expand it into how it's applied. You know, in other words, the situation. The mental or emotional approach means you create the environment first, because without the environment you don't get the experience. Then you make your point. You understand? No. Okay, somebody goes, okay, this is my problem. And they say it exactly. But then, you know, and then it manifests when this situation. That's logical. So you can deal with it in a logical way. But when someone starts off, well, you know, and long time ago, then, you know, someone this and then that, and it goes on for 5 minutes. That's the emotional. Because you don't know what it's about, but you know the field in which whatever it is that's going to be revealed eventually is then explained. You understand? So you have these two approaches. You understand? So depending upon the state someone's in, then you use one or the other. In other words, if you use the intellectual when someone's mental or use the mental when someone's intellectual, then it won't work. Does that make sense?
Is the man sentimental?
Then you use that. It means it's probably more artistic or more like that. So that would mean feminine elements. It's a man, so the logic is there, but that the mind becomes more prominent. You know what I'm saying? So you have to balance what's there. You know what I'm saying? You might find a artistic man is more emotional than an intellectual woman, right? So you might have to use more the emotion, but it still has to be presented logically. While with the woman, then she's more logical, but still it's coming from the emotional field, but you use logic within it. So it's a matter, are you using logic and then using emotion within that, or emotion using logic in that? Does that make sense? Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So I guess we should end now after today. So thank you very much. It was very, how you say, nice here discussing everything and that, very enlivening, nice questions and, you know, everything like that. So thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Master.
Okay, thank you. No, that's good. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Sainitai Gaura Premanandi.